Stand by for action.
Gamer's Haven Special Edition.
This is Ethan with the Gamer's Haven podcast, and I had the distinct pleasure to sit down with someone everyone's probably thinking of right now, is Mr. Steve Kinson, designer of the Mutants and Masterminds role-playing game from Green Ronin Publishing. Now, of course, Green Ronin Publishing just announced that they have obtained the DC Comics license and will be releasing 4 books for that, and they also announced that they're releasing a 3rd edition of their acclaimed Mutants and Masterminds series of games. Now, I was able to get Mr. Kinson on the phone and talk to him about a bit about the design and what's going into Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition, in addition to talking a bit about his career, where he started with various things, and sort of how he's touched a lot of other superhero games and other genres and whatnot. We talked a bit about all kinds of things in the gaming industry, but most notably we talked a bit about Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition. So, as usual, you can go to our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, and you can find a selection of Steve Kinson products available in our Amazon store. So, support the Gamers Haven and head on over to our website. In the meantime, enjoy the interview.
FRP Games is an online retailer specializing in all aspects of your tabletop gaming needs. Whether it's RPGs, dice, war games, or computer games, FRP Games has a wide selection of products. They offer overstock items where you can pick up all kinds of gaming gear ranging from 30% off all the way up to 90% off the retail price. Through our website, you'll be directed to their weekly new products, eBay auctions, or you can even buy your special gaming someone a gift certificate. FRP Games is an authorized Wizards of the Coast retailer and for 10 years has been committed to providing each customer with the highest standard of customer service possible. Visit our website for instant access to FRP Games inventory of thousands of unique gaming items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I'm here to tell you about CantCon. For those of us who can't con, there's CantCon. CantCon will be held at the Johnson County Community College Regnier Center in Overland Park, Kansas, in the Capitol Federal Conference Room on July 9th through the 11th between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. There will be RPG events, board game events, card game events, miniatures games, as well as open gaming tables for impromptu sessions. Pre-registration is open currently, and if you pre-register, you'll receive an additional chance to win swag at CantCon. We have over $2,500 worth of prizes to give away over the course of the convention, and we hope to give it all away. In addition, if you pre-register, you can get a 3-day pass for only $25. If you're only interested in coming one day at a time, you can for only $10 a day. There will be registration available at the door, but you'll have less of a chance to win free prizes that way. Join us at Johnson County Community College for CantCon on July 9th through the 11th, from beginning at 8 a.m. daily. Visit www.cantcon.com for more information. Well, this is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I am here once again with Mr. Steve Kinson, who really needs no introduction. Of anyone who's listened to this show knows we love Steve Kinson and love his stuff. So,
thanks a lot, Ethan. It's great to be back.
It's always a pleasure to have you on here. It would be remiss if I didn't mention, obviously, at least initially, that I do have some questions on the whole Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition and the DC license that's coming up. So,
sure.
But you've also got a lot of other stuff going on, I understand. So we'll sort of go back a little bit and sort of get really into the beginning of this. Is something I ask all the people I interview, I ask the same sort of questions at the beginning and end, and first one I've got is how did you get into gaming in general, not as an industry professional, but how did you first pick up the dice as a hobbyist?
I came across a copy of the first edition of Gamma World, the old gray boxed set, for folks who remember it, when I was in the sixth grade. And I begged my parents to buy it for me, which they did, which I suspect they possibly regret to this day. I taught myself how to play it, you know, about as well as, you know, any self-taught, sixth grader. And talked some of my friends into trying it out with me. And, you know, we just had a blast just rolling up all of these weird mutant characters and looting the ruins of, you know, our hometown. And it was a lot of fun. And that, you know, that was my gateway game into picking up the D&D basic set. And it was pretty much, you know, all downhill from there.
So you must be kind of excited about Gamma World coming back out later this year.
I totally am. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Wizards does with the new edition of Gamma World. What I've heard so far actually sounds pretty cool. So
I'm looking forward to it also. I never got a chance ever to play Gamma World. So,
you know. Oh, it's a blast.
But actually, I lie. I actually have a set of Gamma Rotters. I have that.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That board game, and I think it was set in Gamma World.
Yep.
At least
yep.
somewhat. So, now, how'd you moving on from that? Is how did you actually get into the industry doing your? I mean, your long, 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 long list of stuff that you've done now.
I initially got into the industry as a playtester for Shadowrun. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, I was active on the Genie network in the dark ages of 2400 baud modems.
I remember those days.
And FASA had a forum on Genie where they interacted with their fans. And Tom Dowd, who was the Shadowrun developer, was playtesting the second edition of Shadowrun. And I was a fairly active playtester, which is to say I bombarded Tom with extensive notes and feedback because I was very enthusiastic. And Tom needed some fill writing for an upcoming book and was looking for suggestions and submissions, and I sent him a whole raft of stuff. Mm-hmm. He apparently liked quite a bit of it, and so he decided to use it and contacted me about other freelance opportunities. And so I first got my start writing game product professionally for Shadowrun Second Edition, and built up my resume there, working on some of FASA's other games like Earth Dawn. And it just sort of took off from there.
And you also did some fiction for Shadowrun, didn't you?
I did. I initially wrote four Shadowrun novels for FASA. I later wrote another trilogy of Shadowrun novels for WizKids some years later.
So did you have you thought about jumping back into writing fiction anytime since then?
I have. I've thought about it on a few occasions. And I actually did a short story for an upcoming Shadowrun anthology, which was a lot of fun. A lot of it is just that the right project hasn't come along. And doing my own fiction work while enticing in some ways is also difficult because you have to do it on spec, and it's hard to devote a lot of writing time to a project that I then have to go out and shop around and figure out how to sell. So,
and it would be bad if I didn't mention this at least once. I did notice that you had a credit in a feng shui book called Back for Seconds.
Back for Seconds, yes.
And feng shui is one of our favorites over here. So,
yeah.
I find it amusing. I find lots of people who have worked on those. So,
yeah, that's unfortunately my sole credit for the game line, because As I recall, that was before it ended up with Atlas.
Yeah, I think Back for Seconds was with Daedalus.
Was back with Daedalus, and I think I did that project just before Daedalus folded.
Mm-hmm.
And
sounds
so
about right.
I kind of lost touch with the game line. So by the time it was resurrected with Atlas, I was involved with other things, and the opportunity never really came along. But Chris Premus and I at Green Ronin are both fans of the game.
Yeah, he did the Guiding Hand source book, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I have his version when it was just Ronin Publishing.
Yep.
When he put out. And so you hooked up back up with him over at Green Ronin.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, started your long spiraling road of decay into superhero stuff. So,
yes.
Well, I really should say continued, because looking at your resume, good Lord, man, you've worked on superhero stuff a lot.
Yeah, I've worked on nearly every superhero game around.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few that I didn't have the opportunity, which was a pity. But
snuck past you, apparently.
Yeah.
I spotted your name on a few of the Marvel Superheroes Saga books.
Yep. Yeah.
Which is interesting. It's you didn't get into the early Marvel stuff. Actually, I about 2 weeks ago spoke to Jeff Grubb. So
yeah, I'm a big fan of Jeff's work.
Yeah, Marvel is my red box. It's Gamerworld got you into gaming. Marvel Superheroes got me into gaming. So
yep. Yeah, Marvel Superheroes was my longest gaming campaign ever. I started a Marvel Superheroes game when I was in high school, and it ran pretty much until I graduated from college.
Excellent, excellent. I'm pretty stoked. I get to play a game of it at Gen Con this year. So
awesome.
I haven't played that game in like 15 years. So
yeah.
But it's that's a lot of fun. And I saw you did Guide to Marvel Earth and Reed Richards' Guide to Everything for Saga.
I have contributing credits on
those.
I did some small sections of those books.
Mm-hmm.
But Reed Richards' Guide to Everything is all the good parts of that book are all Mike Selinker.
Okay.
So I think my sole writing credit for Marvel Adventure Game was Masters of Evil for Avengers, which I wrote all of.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you know, you are a master of evil, apparently, then, so.
I try.
Now, you also, jumping over from Marvel, you did a few things in the DC Universe role-playing game for, I believe that was Mayfair at the time.
Yep. That was West End.
Had that gone over West End at that point?
Mayfair was DC Heroes.
Oh, that's right, that's right. I always get those confused.
Mm-hmm.
So you did the JLA source book and the JSA source book.
Yeah, again, I have contributing credits in those books, but those were team efforts, certainly right. Appropriately enough.
Yes, I believe I spoke to I can't remember now, someone else who worked on I think it was the JSA book. So
might have been Chris McLaughlin.
Yes, that was him. Yes.
Yep.
And
Chris is the go-to guy for the Golden Age.
I know, didn't he do the Silver Age book as well?
Yes, he did. He did. Geez. Just out for Mutants and Masterminds.
Yep, Mutants and Masterminds. That speaking of which, we can start getting a little bit into that. From what I understand, you also worked on for the DC Universe was an unpublished Flash, Green Lantern, and Titans book.
Yes, I did. I did write material for all of those books, but unfortunately, they were never published.
Is there any chance we're going to see at least some of that? See some of that material pop up now that you guys have the DC Universe line?
Fairly doubtful. Some of it might be.
It's a bit aged now. Yeah.
It's some of. Yeah, I was going to say some of it is well out of date.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty doubtful.
Oh man. And, of course, just really quickly down the line here, other superhero stuff I saw that you worked on was Aberrant for White Wolf.
Yep.
Silver Age Sentinels, which was my replacement for Champions.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mutants and Masterminds, obviously, came out, and that's all I play now. So Mutants and Masterminds is obviously what you were best known for, I would guess, at this point.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And it came out in, was it 2002?
The first edition of the game.
First edition?
Yeah.
What kind of, what can you tell us about how that came about and the sort of the impetus in why a superhero game under the D20 license? Or really, it was the OGL license at that point, I guess.
It was. Well, I designed the setting that was eventually going to become Freedom City. Mm-hmm. As a freelance project for another publisher. Mm-hmm. And as plans sometimes do, the plans for the book fell through.
Right.
And so I had this, you know, draft manuscript for a superhero setting, and I didn't really have anything to do with it at the time. So I kept it as sort of a pet project and worked on it in my spare time because I like tinkering with settings. And I, you know, added to it quite a bit beyond the specifications of the original project because I could do whatever I wanted with it at that point.
Sure.
And unfortunately, I had no market to pitch it to because at that particular time, there weren't any superhero games currently in print. Mm-hmm. Even Champions, which was the most venerable, was right. in a fallow period before they got bought by DOJ. Mm-hmm. So there was no place to sell. There was nobody to sell it to. So I was talking with Chris Premus at Green Ronin and sort of bemoaning my situation. Hey, I've, you know, got this, you know, superhero setting and I, you know, have nothing I can do with it. And Chris said, well, you know, let me take a look at it. I sent him a copy, and he, pitched me the idea. Green Ronin had gotten its start doing, D20 product, under the open game license with, Death and Freeport and mm-hmm. the other Freeport adventures and various other, D20 related material. So he said, I'll tell you what, would you be interested in designing a D20 based superhero game using the SRD? And we'll set up a two book deal where we'll do the game and we'll do Freedom City as the setting for the game. And I was really very dubious because I thought the idea of a D20 superhero game was a terrible idea. But I really did want to get Freedom City published. So I told him that I said, okay, let me look at it. I'll put together a proposal. And if I think that I can make it work, we'll, you know, figure something out. Mm-hmm. So I spent some time, took the system resource document apart, put together an outline of how I envisioned the game working. And that became the core of what became Mutants and Masterminds.
So what was behind, really, how did you approach turning that, and you also did it with the True 20 system later mm-hmm. on, was you took that the D20 OGL system there and sort of turned it on its ear and decided mm-hmm. to really streamline it.
Mm-hmm. They had similar, although different, impetus to them. Mm-hmm. Mutants and Masterminds was the intention to design a superhero game using the right. core D20 system. True 20 evolved out of material that I designed for Blue Rose, mm-hmm. Which was Green Ronin's effort to create a game that appealed to a different genre of fantasy and would have a little bit more of appeal to either non-gamers or less experienced gamers.
Right.
So there was an effort there to also streamline a lot of the sort of crunchier aspects of the game system.
Excellent. Now, with Mutants and Masterminds and Freedom City, the first edition came out and, of course, was a huge hit.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you... what was your point of view on how well it was accepted by the fans?
Well, I mean, it was very gratifying, certainly. It was also a bit of a surprise because we really had no idea how it was going to do. Mutants and Masterminds, when it was first published, was really kind of a unique creature. And there really wasn't any indication of how the audience would accept it, because it did depart in some significant ways from the system resource document. It wasn't a D20 compatible game,
mm-hmm.
although it shared some common ancestry. It took things in a very different direction. So that had the potential to either be well accepted, or to really come back at us, because people would be like, "Well, what's this? This isn't at all like the D20 games I know." But as it happens, people really got where we were trying to go with it, and it did prove to be very popular.
Excellent. And it maintained out. It was out there for several years before, obviously, second edition came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was the driving force behind doing another edition?
Well, basically, Mutants and Masterminds' success was, like I said, it was a bit of a surprise. And so initially, with the first edition, the effort was to just put the game out there and see how it did. And then when it did well, to follow it up with some things, which also did pretty well. And with second edition, Green Ronin hired me as developer full time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things I really wanted to do, because the game had been out there for a few years, it had been very vigorously tested by the people who were playing it,
right?
Was to really sort of relaunch the game line with a much more solid foundation, with an edition that addressed a lot of concerns, that was more. That had a lot more of the bugs worked out of it, that was much more mature, and that we could really build a game line on. So that became, as soon as I came on as developer, my focus became working on developing second edition and building plans for a long-term game line, which you can pretty much see the results of.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Now, of course, now just earlier this week, Green Ronin announced that they are, of course, putting out a third edition of Mutants and Masterminds.
Mm-hmm. This fall,
is that a plan to have something out at Gen Con, or is that post Gen Con?
No, Mutants and Masterminds Heroes Handbook will be out in the fall, probably October-ish. I would think. What will be out at Gen Con will be the DC Adventures Heroes Handbook.
Excellent. We'll go back to that here in a minute.
And the two are linked. So
yes, because obviously this the third edition announcement got was on the heels of obviously you guys getting the DC license.
Mm-hmm.
But what kind of changes can we expect from 2E to 3E, if you can talk about that?
Well, basically, the idea was to apply a lot of what we've learned. Mm-hmm. Second edition's been out for 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's gotten a lot of play. We've gotten a tremendous amount of feedback. There's been a lot of opportunities to see what works and what doesn't in the game. And in addition to that, the market has changed pretty significantly from the days when Mutants and Masterminds got started. The whole landscape of the open game license has changed significantly.
Right.
And in fact, now games like Mutants and Masterminds are really pretty much all that's left of the open game license.
Yep.
So there's considerably less impetus to have Mutants and Masterminds cleave to any kind of D20 canon.
Mm-hmm.
And M&M has never been especially tied to that. But this was also a great opportunity to sort of jettison the last of the sort of legacy stuff in the game system that is really sort of its, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, junk DNA from the system resource document. So we're sticking very closely to the familiar elements of the system. We're not completely revamping the system from the ground up. A lot of people have been asking of, you know, is it going to use different dice? Is it going to be, you know, it's nothing like that. It's still the same core system. People are going to find it very familiar. There has been a great deal of streamlining. There's been a lot of tuning up. There's been a lot of changes that people will find largely in terminology rather than application as such. There are definitely some new elements in the way certain things are handled. We've taken a lot of, again, we've got 5 years of experience with books like Ultimate Power and lots of supplementary material where we've had additional elements to the system and ways of handling things that we think work really well that we wanted to fold into the core once again. But folks who know and love Second Edition are going to find that the essence of that is very much carried over into Third Edition. Hopefully with a greater sense of simplicity and fewer headaches from some of the problematic stuff.
Sure. Now, will people be able to convert old characters to the new system at all?
That will be pretty easy. They are not – Third Edition is not 100% backwards compatible. You won't necessarily be able to take a Second Edition stat block and – you know, use it 100%, but the numbers themselves will convert very easily, and it'll be a snap to take a second edition character and use them even on the fly in third edition.
So someone who's a veteran of first and second edition is going to find third edition very familiar. In other words,
very much so, very much so.
And is there still going to be some ongoing support for Second Edition through Green Ronin?
We are not planning on supporting Second Edition after Third Edition launches.
And I know you guys have a license with the Lone Wolf development for Hero Lab. Is that going to continue for Third Edition? Do you know?
We are planning to. Yes, we're working things with Lone Wolf right now.
Excellent. That's awesome because you know. I love that thing. So.
Oh, so do we. And we'd very much like to see it continue. Hero Lab has been really a great resource. So.
Oh, yeah. I use it exclusively for that all the time. So.
Yeah.
Now, with the third edition coming out later this year, should we be keeping our eyes open, I would guess, to mutantsandmasterminds.com and... GreenRonin.com for any sneak peeks or anything like that?
That's where you'll see all the news. We are planning all sorts of design and development journals and previews as things progress. So there's a lot going on.
Excellent. And how hands-on are you being with the third edition? Is it are you the guy in charge of it, or is it a... Obviously, it's going to be a team effort. I know that. So
it is. I'm the primary designer on third edition. John Lighthizer is the Mutants and Masterminds and DC Adventures developer, and so John is doing the primary development and editing work on the books, and we are. Things are progressing really well. John and I have a great working relationship. John did the primary editing work on Mutants and Masterminds Second Edition and Freedom City. So he's extremely familiar with the system. and is great at, you know, handling a lot of the aspects that making sure that I'm as clear as I can be.
Sure. Are there any plans to continue the Freedom City setting on in the third edition?
Right now, our third edition plans haven't been announced,
sure.
But we do have products planned beyond October, obviously,
sure.
And we'll be announcing them pretty soon.
Excellent. And obviously, the DC license sort of
which technically was not an answer to your question, but
I understand. the DC license, of course, is now fresh on everybody's mind. In that you guys have gotten the license to do DC, which is correct me if I'm wrong, the first time they've had a role playing game in service for some years now. Since
The DC Universe game, which was
with West
End. I don't know exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, trying to figure out how many years ago that was. It seems like ages, but
I want to say it was about 8 years, but
it's actually around 2000.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah.
So, what can you tell us about how that came about?
Well, basically, it was a long process of,
sure.
of discussion and negotiation, but DC was very interested in working with us and also with producing a game for their 75th anniversary, which is
right.
this year. So we worked out the details, and it was largely on the strength of Mutants and Masterminds that DC was interested in working with us. So because DC wanted to produce a game as opposed to a DC Universe source book for Mutants and Masterminds, we took that as our opportunity to also give Mutants and Masterminds a facelift. And since we were going to be designing a new game anyway, to implement the Mutants and Masterminds rules for DC Adventures, we decided that it was an opportune time for us to give the game a refresh and produce a new edition.
And you guys are putting out the DC Heroes Handbook, the DC Universe Heroes Handbook, this August. I'm assuming, I'm hoping that's going to be a Gen Con release.
That is the plan.
Excellent. Is it going to be compatible with the third edition Mutants and Masterminds Heroes Handbook that comes out later this fall?
Yes. They will be 100% compatible, so you can use one with the other. Interchangeable, really.
Because we're all hoping to see a Centurion go up against Superman at some point. Just so you know,
I'll keep that in mind. Although I think that
Man
of Steel's probably got an edge there.
Probably depends on which version of Superman you're looking at. Obviously, but
this is true. Well, that was a big question for us,
right?
When we were doing our development.
How involved is DC in the development of not only the DC RPG that you guys are working on, plus the Mutants and Masterminds 3rd edition?
Well, DC has approval on all of the DC licensed books, obviously.
Right.
So they review all of the material. But they give us a very free hand where the game system material is concerned. So...
Green Arena has had a lot more recently. They've had a lot of experience working with licensed products.
We have, and the strength of our working with licenses was another thing that appealed to DC. And DC's very specific about their characters and how their characters are handled, but they're also very good about letting people do what they're good at. And one of the reasons they wanted to work with us is because we are good at designing games. So their attitude has been, you know how to design games, so
right.
we're going to let you do that. And, you know, you will run, you know, what you do with our characters by us, and we'll give you a thumbs up or thumbs down or let you know what needs to be done different.
Now, just to clarify, did you guys approach them for the license, or did they approach you?
We approached them.
Excellent. Okay. And the DC license, correct me if I'm wrong, the press release, I believe, said it was going to be 4 books, correct?
Yeah.
At least initially, we're assuming, yep, at this point?
Yep. The initial release schedule is 4 books. The Heroes Handbook, mm-hmm, a 2-volume Heroes and Villains set, and the DC Universe book.
Mm-hmm. And can we expect any art from any named artists that we...
Oh, yes. Yes.
I believe you guys just released the cover for the DC Heroes Handbook, yep, by, yes, some small artist named Alex Ross.
You may have heard of him. Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about working with DC is, mm-hmm, that DC has a positively colossal art library, mm-hmm, by, obviously, some of the greatest comic book artists ever.
Right.
So, we would be fools to have the DC license and not, you know, include some of the, you know, the greatest comic book art that has, you know, ever been done in our books. So, yeah, you can definitely expect to see a lot of DC art in the DC books.
Fantastic. Moving on a little bit from the Mutants and Masterminds, obviously third edition is the big thing right now. But you also have something else that's sort of snuck out the door. Can you tell us about Icons?
Icons is one of those weird little side projects that, like Freedom City, is another one of those side projects that I didn't expect anything really to come of. Icons was my sort of tinkering around with a variety of game systems, particularly Fudge and its later incarnation, Fate, mm-hmm, inspired a lot by the original Marvel Superheroes game and a lot of early superhero RPGs. I was a big Villains and Vigilantes fan back in the day as well. And so I had two sort of things that I was really playing around with. One was a very sort of streamlined, really simple sort of game system for doing superheroes. And the other was playing around with a fun kind of system for random superhero character creation. Because my friends and I always had a lot of kind of goofy fun with the random character creation systems in Villains and Vigilantes and Marvel Superheroes and,
yeah,
games like that. And I was really struck by how fun the process of character creation in some of the Fate-based games, uh-huh, like Spirit of the Century was, just, right, as a process. And I wanted to kind of replicate some of that. So I put all of those various ingredients, you know, together and kind of let them simmer. And I tinkered with the thing as a fun project on the side in my spare time. And Gareth Skarka from Adamant Entertainment happened to mention on some forum or mailing list or something that we're both on, that he was thinking about doing a sort of loosely Fate-inspired superhero game. And I emailed him and I said, that's funny you should mention that because I've been working on such a game. And he said, oh, really? You know, would you mind if I took a look at it? And I said, no, I'm sure. And he did, and we talked it over, and he said, well, you know, my work is done. You know, can I publish it? And so we made arrangements, and Icons is being published in June.
In June. Excellent. Is that going to be in print and PDF, or just PDF?
It's releasing in PDF first. Mm-hmm. I believe that the PDF releases widely at the beginning of June, mm-hmm, and the print edition will follow shortly thereafter. But the folks who pre-ordered the game when it was announced are getting a copy of the PDF as soon as the game ships to the printers. So it'll probably they'll have it next week if all goes well.
Nice. Well, the since you have a long history of superhero, basically being the superhero go-to guy for lately for role-playing games and whatnot, you obviously have a love of comics.
Oh yeah, I'm a big comic book nerd.
And so to fuel that whole comic book nerd, because you know so am I. Do you have a favorite superhero and a supervillain?
I'm always bad at that.
I know.
Because I have a lot of favorite characters.
And I understand it's one of those questions that, you know, you ask you this question next week, you'll get different answers, you know.
Yeah, it really does depend very heavily on, you know, what kind of mood I'm in. I'm a big Green Lantern fan, and I've certainly been enjoying Geoff Johns' run on Green Lantern quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for a friend to get done with them so I can actually read them. So
yeah, and I'm a big Doctor Strange fan. I love especially like just like Lee and Ditko Doctor Strange.
Oh well, Ditko's genius. So
yeah. Villains, I have to say I have a thing. I like villains who get the good dialogue, the ones who really are just like the ones who like chew the scenery. Right. So, I mean, I love a good like Dr. Doom rant, you know, when he's written well and you get somebody who really gets him going on a tear. I find that really enjoyable. And you know, so in that, I guess I do have a thing for a lot of the mastermind villains. You know, I like them just because they like to speechify, and makes for a fun bad guy.
And how did you use your love of comics to really guide you in creating something like Freedom City?
Well, I mean, Freedom City is just basically a big love letter to. Everything. I mean, it might as well have just been subtitled "Everything Steve Likes About Comics."
Sure.
You know. So, I mean, it was just a matter of putting together a big homage to all the things about comics that I thought were cool, and particularly all the things about comic book worlds that I thought were cool. There's a lot of characters in Freedom City, and there are a lot of character homages, but. One of the things I really drew inspiration from was Patrick Sweeney's San Angelo was out a few years before Freedom City. And Patrick did an awesome job with San Angelo of making it seem like a very real place where people might actually live. And I remember there's a I'm probably going to mangle it. But there's a quote from Kurt Busiek from Astro City where he's talking about how the high concept of Astro City is that we so often asked ourselves the question of what would superheroes be like if they existed in the real world. But Astro City turns it around and asks us the question, what would it be like if we lived in their world? And what's it like to live in a superhero world and to be a regular person and to be surrounded by all of that sort of stuff? And so that informed a lot of Freedom City in terms of trying to get the feel of what a world where comic book superheroes were real would be like.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, I have just a few more questions for you, getting into wrapping this up. Is there anything other than the obvious, I would guess? Obviously, you're probably pretty excited about the DC Universe and Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition coming out. I know I am. But is there anything coming up that either you're working on or even something that you're not working on that is coming out soon that you're excited about?
Well, I'm certainly excited about Icons finally getting out there and people having a chance to play around with it. And I'm really, really curious to see how it works for everybody. You know, there's a real rubber meets the road kind of aspect to game design, where no matter how much you personally work with it, no matter how much you play test it in small groups and you get play testers who give you feedback, there's really, it's a whole different level when a game is out there in the wild and everybody is playing it. And you know, that's where you really find out, you know, it's the ultimate stress test of does the game really work and does it really do what you wanted it to do in the first place? And oftentimes, you know, it's does it do things you never expected it to do, but oftentimes in a really good way, where people will just come up with these things and it's just like, wow, that's really cool. I wish I had thought of that.
And when was the last time that you you had a chance to either play or run something?
My aforementioned high school and college gaming group is actually still together.
Nice. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. So we still get together about once a month, which is about all we can manage right now, because we're, you know, we all have lives.
Yeah. That whole grown-up thing.
Yeah, that whole, you know, having a life. And
paying those pesky bills.
Yeah.
And I pay them once, and then they keep coming back. Yeah.
But yeah, we still get together. I ran Icons for them about 3 weeks ago, and we've got an ongoing 4th edition D&D game that a friend of mine is running, which has been a lot of fun. So, and another friend of mine in the group is gearing up to run a Pirates game, so that should be fun.
Is there any kind of sandbox out there that you'd love to get your hands into, just to play around with?
Design-wise, or just, you know,
really anything. Design-wise, you know, would you like to futz with the 4th edition rules at all and see what comes out of that, you know, anything like that?
I think there'd be some fun to be had there. I have to say, if anyone from Wizards of the Coast is listening, that I have been thwarted in my desire to work on Gamma World at least once.
Oh, no.
And considering the number of editions Gamma World has had, that's really huge injustice. Because, you know, there should be at least one edition that I get to work on. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely on my list. But I've been very fortunate to be able to work on a lot of the games and properties that I've wanted to over the years. And DC is one of the last big ones that I wanted to check off my list. So
excellent. And one of the big things that the Gamers Haven is sort of all about is sort of spreading the love and knowledge of the tabletop gaming hobby. And the question I have for you is, what is it about this hobby that keeps you coming back? What is it about this hobby that you love so much?
Well, ultimately, for me, the big thing about gaming is that it's such a great creative outlet. It's a wonderful opportunity to exercise your imagination in all kinds of ways, from creating characters to creating adventures to creating whole worlds, even to building the game systems themselves. Although there's a lot of mechanics and mathematics to it, ultimately it's still much more of an art than a science. And there's really a lot of imagination that goes into coming up with those game mechanics and their implementation. And I'm often just awed by the sheer imaginative power of our hobby and our industry as a whole. I read this great piece in the Boston Globe talking about the anniversary of Dungeons and Dragons and about eulogizing Gary Gygax.
Mm-hmm.
That was talking about basically how for the vast majority of people who are outside the role-playing game, tabletop gaming hobby, you know, they have to consider that a lot of the D&D nerds who started out, you know, in the 70s and 80s, nowadays are the people who are writing screenplays and designing video games and working in multimedia and working in film and publishing and all kinds of endeavors. And, you know, if people are enjoying the fact that there's this huge renaissance in what we could call geek culture of fantasy films and superhero films and multimedia and the huge success of things like Lord of the Rings as a film trilogy. So much of that is owed to the, you know, sparks of imagination that were lit by those role-playing games that I think stick with the creative people who are still creating.
Alrighty. And just the last thing, one last bit that sort of popped into my head was when we're 20 years down the line here, when people are still playing Mutants and Masterminds, of course,
mm-hmm.
is there something that you want to tell the fans right now? Just anything you want to get off your chest, go right ahead.
Well, I hope that if folks are still playing Mutants and Masterminds 20 years from now, that whatever iteration it's in and whether or not they're downloading it directly into their brains, that we never lose sight of the fact that we're talking about games and that they're supposed to be fun and that they're supposed to be about imagination and getting together with your friends and having a good time. That's really what it's all about at the, you know, close of business. And I hope we never lose sight of that.
All right. Well, I want to thank you again, Steve, for taking the time out to talk to us over here at the Gamers Haven. It's been a genuine pleasure, as usual.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Okay, Carol, now you take these notes, and then we're about ready to begin.
Okay, sure.
Well, what are you two doing here? We don't record until tomorrow.
We're making a new promo for All Games Considered, since you were dragging your feet getting one written.
Hey.
She's right, though. It's been too long, and a lot has happened since the last promo.
Yeah, like winning the Gold Emmy for Best Gaming Podcast for 2009.
You mean the one you try to work into the conversation every other episode?
Hey.
Now, there's more than that. There's the new format.
You mean the main show every 2 weeks and the assortment of other features in the meantime?
Right, like games you may never have heard of, the review and new shows.
Don't forget the RPG buffet.
And on the main show, we have more time to focus on gaming topics.
Like board and card games.
And RPGs.
And the people who play them, from the old school to the newest of the new.
But no changeling. Hey!
Find out more at agcpodcast.info. All games considered, because there's more than one true way to play.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States License, some rights reserved, Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.